Since it's the weekend, I'm going to let you guys go a little bit early today. We're not going to go the normal 45 minutes. We'll leave at 44 minutes and 57 seconds. So that will be a little early that I'll let you off. I just wanted to let you know so that you're not thrown off by the change there. So we'll be leaving at 44 minutes and 57 seconds today. Welcome to the Republican Professor. I'm your host and my own host, Dr. Lucas J. Mather. We're in Gorsuch's opinion for the court in Bostock. We're going to continue. A, I'm on 1739 of the Supreme Court Reporter. I mistakenly said the U.S. reports. The pagination that Giggle Scholar uses is the Supreme Court Reporter for this one for some reason. I don't know why. I don't understand it. I don't try to understand it, okay? I'm just passing it on. We got Bostock. Okay, so I'm going to share my screen. Feel free to call me, Sharon. I've already shown you how to get here. And so we're in A. How do we know what page it is? Well, because it'll say in the middle there, 1739, right there in the middle of the page. Okay. The only statutorily protected individuals at issue, the only statutorily protected characteristic at issue in today's cases is sex. And that is also the primary term in Title VII, whose meaning the parties dispute. Appealing to roughly contemporaneous dictionaries, the employers say that, as used here, the term sex in 1964 referred to status as either male or female, determined by reproductive biology. The employees counter by submitting that even in 1964, the term bore a broader scope, capturing more than anatomy and reaching at least some norms concerning gender identity and sexual orientation. All right, here we go. Reaching at least some norms. All right. Norms, huh? All right, here we go. I'm just reading it, like I said. But because nothing in our approach to these cases turns on the outcomes of the party's debate, and because the employees concede the point for argument's sake, we proceed on the assumption that sex signified what the employers suggest, referring only to biological distinctions between male and female. And in the side margin here, I say, okay. Still, that's just a starting point, says Gorsuch. Remember, we're in Bostock versus Clayton County. In the U.S. reports, it's the 590th volume, starting at page 644, 2020. In the Supreme Court Reporter, which is what we're using here on Giggle Scholar, it's at 1739 right now. And how do you know what the pagination is and the way to cite it? It's right up here at the top, 140. Supreme Court Recorder at 1731, 2020. See right there. This is the pagination they're using. Don't know why. All right. Okay. Still, that's just a starting point. The question isn't just what sex meant, but what Title VII says about it. Most notably, the statute prohibits employers from taking certain actions because of sex. And as this court has previously explained, the ordinary meaning of because of is by reason of or on account of. In the language of law, this means that Title VII's because of test incorporates the simple and traditional standard of but for causation. Getting fancy there, Gorsuch. Getting fancy. Never thought we'd have to get into the metaphysics of causation here. Gorsuch is claiming here that he's just using male female for definition of sex. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. All right, we're gonna hold him to it. We're gonna hold him to it. Is it true that that's really what he's assuming? All right. That form of causation is established whenever a particular outcome would not have happened but for the purported cause. In other words, a but-for test directs us to change one thing at a time and see if the outcome changes. If it does, we have found a but-for cause. This can be a sweeping standard. Often, events have multiple but-for causes. So, for example, if a car accident occurred both because the defendant ran a red light and because the plaintiff failed to signal his turn at the intersection, we might call each a but-for cause of the collision. When it comes to Title VII, remember we're talking about the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Remember, this is statutory construction. Remember that statute prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. Okay? Male, female. That's what Gorsuch is saying. Remember, he's a Trump appointee, he's a Republican. But the Democrats are agreeing with him for some reason. All right. So everything is hinging on this word sex. We don't really care about the but for thing. Okay? We get what because means. We understand what because means. Causation. The metaphysics of causation. We get it. Yeah. No problem. Like, no problem. We're talking about I'm interested in the semantics of the word sex, and is he changing the meaning? But you tell me in the comments. You tell me. Okay. All right. When it comes to Title VII, the adoption of the traditional but-for causation standard means a defendant cannot avoid liability just by citing some other factor that contributed to its challenged employment decision. So long as the plaintiff's sex was one but-for cause of that decision, that is enough to trigger the law. No doubt. Congress could have taken a more parsimonious approach as it has in other statutes. It could have added solely to indicate that actions taken because of a confluence of multiple factors do not violate the law. Or it could have written primarily because of to indicate that the prohibited factor had to be the main cause of the defendant's challenged employment decision. But none of this is the law we have. Now, if you're on YouBoob watching this, pay close attention to what I am highlighting for you. Okay? And if you're on audio only, just listen carefully, all right? He says again, no doubt Congress could have taken a more parsimonious approach. It could have added solely. Because of, it could have said primarily because of. Now, let me just remind you here. He's saying it could have done that. Congress could have done that in 1964. I'm going to remind you that what he's saying here is that Congress could also do that in 2020. Congress can do it, and this is when the decision came out, is in 2020. In other words, this decision comes out, you don't like it, you're a congressman, you read it, and you could draft a bill immediately and change it. That's what Gorsuch is saying. Is he's saying, fine, male, female is the meaning of sex. Congress did not specify enough for employers to avoid liability and trigger this law, trigger discovery and all that stuff that goes into this, all this expense, the appeals, the whole process. And Congress could have done that in 1964, which is another way of saying it could do it now. It can still do it. It can just draft a law and put those words in there to shield employers, and then there you go. That's what Gorsuch is saying, is it's not my issue. I'm reading him as charitably as possible. He's a Republican. I've read a lot of Gorsuch. I think he's very thoughtful. I think this is what he's saying. I don't think the Democrats would say that, but I think that's what Gorsuch would say. Does that make sense? If it doesn't make sense, well, then keep going and maybe it will make sense. If anything, Congress has moved in the opposite direction, supplementing Title VII in 1991 to allow a plaintiff to prevail merely by showing that a protected trait like sex was a motivating factor in a defendant's challenged employment practice. So he's saying Congress, it's Congress's fault. This is what he's saying, is he's saying, don't blame me for this decision. It's Congress's fault. Blame your representative, blame yourself as a voter for not doing enough to organize voting and get the Congress that you want to change this. Congress is micromanaging the employment relationship. And maybe you think they can't do that as a matter of constitutional law. And I would be very sympathetic to that. I'd like to know where that's going and how you would provide evidence for that claim. I would definitely read that because I think we're getting way too micromanagey of the employment decision. And it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And the lawyers love it. It benefits the lawyers. The lawyers love this complicating, micromanaging relationship that Congress has with employment. And it doesn't need to be this way. We could have a hands-off Congress that just says, hey, you guys figure it out. Okay? We're not going to micromanage everything, make everything a federal case. That's not what we're going to do. We continue. I hope I'm making sense. We continue. Roman numeral 2A. Under this more forgiving standard, liability can sometimes follow even if sex wasn't a but-for cause of the employer's challenge decision. Still, because nothing in our analysis depends on the motivating factor test, we focus on the more traditional but-for causation standard that continues to afford a viable, if no longer exclusive, path to relief under Title VII. And if you're thinking, I can't listen to this podcast, are you kidding me? This is I'm doing this for a reason. Buck up. Listen up. I'm doing this for a reason. You should be concerned that attorneys just love this. You should be very concerned. You know, it doesn't have to be this way. If you just get the Congress in there, that doesn't need to micromanage everything under the sun. All right. As sweeping as even the but-for causation standard can be, Title VII does not concern itself with everything that happens because of sex. Remember, we're talking about the Civil Rights Act of 1964, allegedly. The statute imposes liability on employers on employers only when they fail or refuse to hire, discharge, or otherwise discriminate against someone because of a statutorily protected characteristic like sex. The employers acknowledge that they discharge the plaintiffs in today's cases, but assert that the statute's list of verbs is qualified by the last item on it, otherwise discriminate against. By virtue of the word otherwise, the employer suggests Title VII concerns itself not with every discharge, only with those discharges that involve discrimination. Accepting this point, too, for argument's sake, the question becomes, what did discriminate mean in 1964? As it turns out, it meant then roughly what it means today. Shocker. The same with sex. Hello. 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 Justice Jackson. Hello. Who doesn't know what a woman is or pretends like she doesn't? To make a difference in treatment of or favor of one as compared to another, to discriminate against a person then would seem to mean treating that individual worse than others who are similarly situated. The so-called disparate treatment cases like today's, this court has also held that in so-called disparate treatment cases like today's, this court has also held that the difference in treatment based on sex must be intentional. Okay. So, taken together, an employer who intentionally treats a person worse because of sex, such as by firing the person for actions or attributes it would tolerate in an individual of another sex. Why would you say another sex? Why don't you just say the opposite sex? Okay. Discriminates against that person in violation of Title VII. You wanted to micromanage the employment relation? Good luck. Yeah, then it's harder to get jobs. Let me just stop here and just complain to you. It's harder to get jobs. It'll be harder to create jobs. It'll be harder to get jobs. Why? Because look at what employers have to do. They can't just look you over and go, yeah, it looks like a good fit. Let's go. Let's do it. It has to be some big, complicated process with lawyers and bull crap like that. It's got to be a federal case for every hiring. And they're going to not hire as easily because there's too much risk. So fewer jobs are going to get created. More jobs would be created tomorrow if you got rid of this stuff. Stop micromanaging everything. All you're doing is inviting lawyers to be a part of everything. You're empowering the lawyers, is what you're doing. Lawyers love it. They love it. It's how they make money. Right? Anymore, the AI bots are going to take over and that they don't love it as much. You got to see this book called A Nation Under Lawyers by Mary Ann Glendon. A Nation Under Lawyers by Mary Ann Glendon. Write it down. Maybe we'll have her on the podcast at some point. I asked her a little while ago, 3 years ago. She said she was busy writing a book. All right. Maybe she was. I think she was. She seemed like a nice lady. All righty. Let's see here. Where were we? Accepting this point two for argument's sake, the question becomes, what did discriminate be? Okay, taken together. All right. At first glance, another interpretation might seem possible. Discrimination sometimes involves the act, practice, or instance of discriminating categorically rather than individually. Okay. On that understanding, the statute would require us to consider the employer's treatment of groups rather than individuals. You'd still have to know what makes an individual part of the group. To see how a policy affects one sex as a whole versus the, go to the next page, the, the other as a whole. That idea holds some intuitive appeal too. Maybe the law concerns itself simply with ensuring that employers don't treat women generally less favorably than they do men. So, how can we tell which sense individual or group discriminate carries in Title VII? The statute answers that question directly. It tells us three times, including immediately after the words discriminate against, that our focus should be on individuals, not groups. Employers may not fail or refuse to hire or discharge any individual or otherwise discriminate against any individual with respect to his compensation terms, conditions or privileges of employment because of such individual's sex. Okay. And the meaning of individual was as uncontroversial in 1964 as it is today. I agree. Good job. Nice job. A particular being as distinguished from a class, species, or collection. Here again, Congress could have written the law differently. It might have said that it shall be an unlawful employment practice to prefer one sex to the other in hiring, firing, or the terms or conditions of employment. It might have said that there should be no sex discrimination, perhaps implying a focus on differential treatment between the two sexes as groups. More narrowly still, it could have forbidden only sexist policies against women as a class, but once again, that is not the law we have. The consequence of, in other words, when he says that's not the law we have, he's saying this is his game here. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a game to him, but he's saying blame Congress. And Congress can fix it. It's not like Congress's hands are tied. They can fix it. They will fix it when they get enough pressure to fix it. And how can you bring that pressure? Well, it's called politics. That's what Gorsuch is saying here. Republican Trump appointee. He's saying, don't expect judges to fix this. Congress created it. Congress can fix it. I'm telling you how they can fix it. So, go bug Congress about it. That's what he's saying. The consequence of The law's focus on individuals rather than groups are anything but academic consequences. Suppose an employer fires a woman for refusing his sexual advances. It's no defense for the employer to note that while he treated that individual woman worse than he would have treated a man, he gives preferential treatment to female employees overall. The employer is liable for treating this woman worse in part because of her sex. Nor is it a defense for an employer to say it discriminates against both men and women because of sex. This statute works to protect individuals of both sexes from discrimination and does so equally. So, an employer who fires a woman, Hannah, because she is insufficiently feminine, and also fires a man, Bob, for being insufficiently masculine, may treat men and women as groups more or less equally, but in both cases, the employer fires an individual in part because of sex. Instead of avoiding Title VII exposure, this employer doubles it. So that's the hole that Gorsuch sees in the law that he thinks you can drive a Mack truck through, and he's going to drive it right through that. That's what he's saying. And the next thing you know, a guy who says, "I'm a girl today," can't be fired in any way, shape, or form because of that fact that he said that. Now, we haven't gotten to the details about what legally constitutes the transgender status, when that's triggered, how do you know? And I'm not sure it's ever going to appear in this record here that we have. And so we might be a little bit concerned about the future there. But Gorsuch is saying that you can undo this if you want through Congress. And if you think that that's what should happen, you should do that. And Congress should do that. That's his Republican take. He's a, recall, Trump appointee Republican, writing for the majority in Bostock versus Clayton County. Now, we're in Roman numeral two. We just finished A. Now we're in B. We're going to stop here. I want you to have a happy rest of your Saturday. It's 21 June 2025, years after Jesus. Tomorrow's church. I'm looking forward to it. I'm not preaching, but I'm going to make the coffee and I'm going to open up and I'm going to close up and I'm going to make sure everything is orderly and secure. And it's great, great fun. I hope that you go to church as well. Find a good church. Get involved. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.